Spot. Driving. No purchase necessary.
The following is a live show streaming from two radio show producers / sports fans. Ray Atkinson and Josh Hall have one mission: to gain your attention. This is the Baltimore Sports Free-for-All.
Josh, I gotta open with this.
Okay, what?
Maryland's gonna get their ass kicked in the Big Ten.
Jeez, really? We gotta start with that again.
Of course we gotta start with that again. It never gets old.
By the way, speaking of something that seems, I guess, new to a sense, should we point out that we are recording this on a Tuesday morning, this newest episode of the Baltimore Sports Free-for-All?
I can't remember the last time I did early morning radio, except for
me either.
Except for maybe when I was let go from my previous station.
I'll tell you what, though. I do feel more refreshed doing this compared to doing it towards the end of the night when you're getting ready to mail it in and go to bed and what have you.
I say I'm as refreshed as I'm going to be for a podcast, but when it comes to morning, no, I'm a night guy.
But it is your day off, right? So
I would say that. But at the same time, I'd rather be asleep right now. But then again, I'd rather be doing a podcast here for all of our loyal, loyal listeners. And this is the Baltimore Sports Free-for-All, which you can hear us on
SFMSports.net.
But also Audio Boom, Stitcher, and Spreaker.
Yep, that is absolutely right. New homes for the Baltimore Sports Free-for-All. And where can you find us on Facebook, Ray?
Yeah, Baltimore Sports Free-for-All Podcast. And our Twitter, at BSportsFree, number 4, all. Josh, teacher blog.
The Sunday Night Sports Delight. And, of course, you can find that on Blogger, which, of course, Google, whatever. I mean, we really don't, can we say Blogger, Google, or just, we'll stick with Blogger.
Okay, yeah, just
for a future reference, we'll just stick with Blogger.
I mean, you want to, like, have a specific thing that people are looking out for and what site they're going on. What's it about this week?
Well, actually, of course, we're going to be talking Terps.
I meant your blog. What's it about this week?
Well, the blog this week is going to center around Torrey Smith. So our picture of the weekend, video of the weekend, quote of the weekend, and our interesting sports talk segments, or I guess portions of the blog, all dedicated to Torrey Smith, who announced several days ago that he will no longer be in a Baltimore Ravens uniform.
I mean, geez, you act like the guy died.
Well, not really.
It's like we're doing an in memoriam for Torrey Smith.
It feels like it in a sense, though. I mean, most people on social media, Baltimore Ravens fans in general, were feeling that way, that this is the last we'll see of Torrey Smith ever in the state of Maryland, let alone the Baltimore Ravens uniform.
I think he retires as a Raven.
He probably could.
Like Jared Johnson did this past week.
He's so young. I mean, you know.
Jared Johnson signed a one-day contract with the Ravens so he could retire a Raven.
And isn't that weird that you don't really think of Jared Johnson as, say, a first ballot Hall of Fame kind of guy? I mean, usually players like that end up doing that with their respective club. They do the one-day contract and retire, but it was a nice gesture on the Ravens' part. Jared Johnson was a great community guy with the Baltimore Ravens, solid linebacker with the Baltimore Ravens, and had a few good years with the San Diego Chargers. So I guess you could say his career wasn't a total wash, especially for someone who I believe was a late-round pick.
So, yes, he was. And Jared Johnson was a force to be reckoned with here in Baltimore. So happy trails in the dust. Go say hi to Patrick Willis for us.
And Justin Smith.
Wow. Something foul is going on in the kingdom of San Francisco when your star player retires at 30, a little bit after your coach was forced to resign after having a successful run there after only just 4 seasons. And then, there's talks about trading your star quarterback who a couple years ago was your franchise darling, and you picked him over Alex Smith, who is having a successful career right now in Kansas City.
Yeah, a successful career in Kansas City, even though not one touchdown pass was thrown to a wide receiver.
Yeah.
Jeez. I'll tell you what, Torrey Smith, yeah, I mean, sure, he's going to San Francisco where it seems like the bridges are burning there, but hey, I think I'd rather go to a team whose bridges are burning than a team where it's least likely you'll get a touchdown reception.
Or maybe it's the team that's across the bridge in the Oakland Raiders where, what are they doing?
I think they're planning their move to Los Angeles again.
Yeah.
Nah,
meanwhile, the Buffalo Bills stock is up because that team seems to be going all over the place. And it's kind of fun to watch a little bit, even though Kiko Alonso was pretty fun to watch in a Bills uniform.
Well, LeSean McCoy, of course, I think because the AFC East is more of a slot receiver division, in the AFC where usually your best player is the wide receiver that gets 80 to 90 receptions a year and 1,200 yards and, you know, not so much your deep threat. It's not so much of a running back division like the AFC North is, but yeah, I think LeSean McCoy may have some decent success there in Buffalo.
Well, today's show, we're talking about the Maryland Terrapins because
absolutely.
That's what I opened the show
Stock
with.
Stock is way up right now.
Yes, both men and women, of course, as we always do, because, hey, you got to give the ladies some love because this is the most successful they've been in a long time.
The undisputed Big Ten champions.
Even though they've been consistently successful, this is like a level above what they've been, and now we've seen something that they've done historically in the Big Ten that only two other teams have done. And we're going to be talking about Orioles spring training because that is well underway. And finally, we're talking about spring training with spring-like weather outside.
Oh, it is nice outside.
I mean, on Monday, it was 60 degrees. It was a high of 60. I've never seen the word six. I mean, the letters, the number six. It's all over the place here. It's early in the morning. So I'm thinking that numbers are words and letters are numbers and everything else like that. Yes, the number six I haven't seen in a forecast since, like, last summer because even when it was like down to like -4, -2, there was never a 6. There was never a 36 degrees. There was never a 26 degrees. It was always -4 and everything else that was going on. Finally, it is 60 degrees and my front yard is still covered in snow.
Yeah, this past Sunday, I believe it was like 46, 47 degrees. I had the windows down, Ray.
Yeah.
You know how
I didn't even wear a jacket on Monday.
You know how that was like, you know, we've had a cold winter in Maryland when it's 47 degrees and most people have their car windows down.
Yeah, it felt like summertime out there. It was a force to be reckoned with.
So does that mean we're getting tougher as Marylanders or is that kind of demean since
No. The moment that we get like mid-90s to low 100s, people are going to be like, it's so hot. I'm like, guys, remember, -28-degree wind chill on Valentine's Day, 60-mile-per-hour winds, power out for 6 hours.
Yeah.
Had to shut my water off because I was fearing my pipes freezing.
A lot of people's pipes were freezing this year. A lot of busted pipes. So
oh, yeah.
That's never a good feeling.
I've got some decent pictures of some apartments that I've been around and seen that had some busted pipes.
Yeah.
Not busting in the pipes are the Maryland Terrapins. They are getting ready to start their big tournament play. The men, the women, though, wrapped up a successful Big Ten championship run. They are now the undisputed champions of both the regular season and the Big Ten tournament. They will now be awaiting the big dance on Selection Sunday. I think the women get released at the same time as the men, right?
Right around that time, yes. And, of course, looking at the recent bracketology predictions on ESPN.com, the Maryland Lady Terps are picked to be a number one seed in the tournament. I guess that's no big surprise considering the year they had in the Big Ten, where they are ranked in the AP polls, and you know, looking at the rest of the teams and how well they are stacked compared to the rest of the top 25, it is safe to say the Lady Terps are no question going to be a first seed in the tournament coming up.
Did you watch their game against Ohio State in the Big Ten final? It was quite the thriller.
I will admit I did get scared a little bit for the Lady Terps, thinking, oh man, if they were good, if there is a downfall coming here, I hope it's not the finals, because it's just, even though the Lady Terps had an outstanding year in the Big Ten, It would just look so bad for them to end their Big Ten season on that note against a team that's not even ranked in the top 25, Ohio State.
Is that like the Maryland men in football, where they seemed like they had a promising season, the way it ended was just left a sour taste in your mouth?
Where they could have had 8 or 9 wins? Yeah, I know what you're talking about. Yeah,
that one game has to mess it up. Maybe so much more.
Rutgers, yeah.
Maybe so much more in football when you've got a shorter season. But in basketball, they can still go on. I mean, did Maryland win the ACC tournament when they won the national championship?
I think they did. They had an outstanding roster that year that Brenda Freeze took. I think 2006, right, was the year they won the national title.
I'm talking about the men.
Oh, the men. No, I don't believe they were the ACC champion that year.
No, they didn't win the tournament, and therefore they used to say, oh, well, it's down. Everybody was like all dejected. Then they go on to win a national championship, which is the one that really, really counts.
Isn't it weird that they could have went to back-to-back national title games, considering that in the Final Four they were against Duke, and of course Maryland fans don't want to remember those crucial last 2 minutes of that game against Duke in the Final Four in 2001.
Yep, everybody still though remembers that game.
I guess if it had to be reminiscent to anything, it was Ravens fans when the Ravens were facing the Patriots in the 2011-2012 AFC Championship game. Back-to-back title games.
Lee Evans and Justin Tucker, and the rest is history.
Man.
Not Justin Tucker. That's an insult to Justin Tucker.
But I guess if you win the championship the following year, you could throw that woulda, coulda, shoulda out the window.
Billy
anyways.
Cundiff.
But I guess back-to-back titles are always nice. But yeah, the Maryland women, I'll tell you what, right now, they are looking like a prominent national title favorite the way they have been playing these last, 20 games that they've won now in a row.
Still have yet to lose since the early month of December.
When they lost to, I believe, Notre Dame last time. Notre Dame then ranked number two, number three in the nation. Yeah, the Maryland Lady Terps won 77-74 in the Sunday Big Ten Tournament Final against the Ohio State Buckeyes. And looking at this game and the way it played out, you would have thought that Ohio State was going to give them a run for their money in the second half. You had Maryland leading in the first half 42-34, and once Ohio State was coming up in the scoring 40 points in the second half, the Lady Terps scoring 35 in the second half. I'll tell you what, man, if the Terps don't score more than 30 points in that second half, Ohio State has them in that game.
Yeah, because,
and then we're having a completely different discussion.
Yeah, because Brianna Jones, she got into some foul trouble early on, and it seemed like, oh boy, this could be a very, very interesting game. You're going up against Ohio State in a championship game, and you are without your best player. You're thinking to yourself, oh boy, what? It was good coaching on Brenda Freeze's part. Familiarity with the Nebraska game the men had to close out the Big Ten regular season on their part. I remember it was Mello Trimble who got into some foul trouble, and the way Mark Turgeon would manipulate his lineups, he made it into a point where it was Trimble coming in on offensive possessions, and on the defensive possessions took him back out and kind of cycled him in, and then Mello Trimble was Maryland's best player, followed by Des Wells. And when you're looking at the way the coaching was set up, it was almost parallel to the women in Brianna Jones being in foul trouble. And it was just a great game all around that the Maryland women had against Ohio State. I remember it's kind of funny, though, because my girlfriend is an Ohio State fan, and I cover Maryland, and my best friend's a Michigan fan, so I'm all over the place with that. And now I have to actually worry about that because same conference, and I got a vested interest. My girlfriend's all screaming up and down stairs, going crazy, going nuts for a women's game. And then Maryland wins, and she's all dejected and sad. And I'm like, should I be happy or sad right now? I'm kind of torn about where I should be.
No, you should be in purgatory. I mean, it's not so bad, but it's not really so nice
either. It's so-so.
It's so-so. Going back to Brianna Jones here, she did seem to have an off game compared to her past 10 games where she played like an All-American center. Well, there was another center on the Lady Terps starting roster who actually put up a decent performance, and you thought maybe their numbers should have been switched around. Brianna Jones had 6 points, 6 rebounds. Melina Howard, the other center on the Terps roster, had 12 points, 12 rebounds.
Double-double. That's sexy.
Exactly. And, of course, Lexi Brown having another outstanding game, 19 points, 6 assists, went 5 for 6 in free throws, 4 for 8 from the three-point range. And I think that was the key to the Lady Terps' Big Ten championship win over the Ohio State Buckeyes. And now we move on to the NCAA National Tournament. 64. We can't call it March Madness anymore because since it's branded, right? Somebody in a suit had to brand it.
Yeah, well, we could say March Madness. We're not selling anything right now. I'm not saying.
Not yet.
I'm like, check out Josh's Bagels and check out March Madness. You can't say March Madness in a commercial or Super Bowl in a commercial. That's because.
Don't you hate that, though?
Not really.
I do. I gotta admit, I do hate
that's
that.
That's my brand. What the hell are you using it in your brand for?
But
when you're talking about news and everything else like that, like we're doing right now, this is news we're talking about. Yeah, you can use Super Bowl and March Madness. It's what's called fair use, Josh.
And speaking of the Lady Terps, when they will be next taking the court, all we can tell you is the NCAA Division I Women's Basketball Tournament will be tipping off on March the 20th. So we may have an episode or two before we start talking the Lady Terps in March Madness play and how well they're doing. I think they're going to go a long way. If they don't go anything farther than the Final Four, I will be shocked because this team has played outstanding this year.
So you're going Final Four or bust?
You know what? I'm just going to say this. Finals or bust. I mean, Final Four, yeah, but go all the way, man.
So you go from the Final Four to the championship, and it's championship or bust for the Maryland Terrapin women. Wow, you're putting some serious expectations on these college students there, Josh.
For a team that is 30-2, 18-0 in the Big Ten this year, you also have the Big Ten Coach of the Year in women's basketball in the Big Ten, Brenda Fries. Yeah, you know what? You're 30-2, 18-0 in your conference. Yeah, I expect big things out of you.
Yeah, so Coach of the Year, Brenda Fries. Moving on to the men, Coach of the Year, Mark Turgeon.
Whoever thought we would have ever said that about Mark Turgeon, the same guy most Maryland fans were calling for his head years ago.
And in their inaugural year in the Big Ten. Who would have thunk it?
26-5, 14-4 in the Big Ten, ranked in the top 10 in the AP polls.
By the way, those people that I always make fun of that hated on Maryland's move to the Big Ten and saying that they're going to get their ass kicked, as I do ad nauseum, those people are now coming up with the argument, oh, well, the Big Ten had a down year. No, you do not get to make that argument right now because I screened so many phone calls when Maryland made their move to the Big Ten of so many angry fans saying they're going to get their asses kicked. Nobody said that the Big Ten was going to have a down year in 2014-2015. Right. Nobody.
All right, let's look.
You do not get to make that argument.
Let's look at the spectrum here with the Maryland athletic program. Of course, moving to the Big Ten was a controversial move because you have ACC contemporaries who are saying, well, you know, you're moving there because of the money, and if you really loved it here, you would have stayed. Of course, we're using Coach K quotes here when it comes to Maryland basketball.
If they weren't our rival, they wouldn't be leaving the ACC.
Yeah, exactly. So, yeah, I mean, you could say Maryland football had a down year, but at the same time, they were in the same conference as your current national champion Ohio State Buckeyes. So your ladder is right there in your own conference, same as the Maryland men who are playing in the same conference as the Wisconsin Badgers, who are ranked higher than them and are the regular season Big Ten champions.
And you see some of the promo packages that the Big Ten Network puts together for Maryland and some of the other shows they have, and you're seeing Maryland getting some exposure, and the fact that they have such a big tie with Under Armour. All of a sudden, Maryland is a little bit of a spicy meatball for somebody who's coming out of high school and looking for potential colleges to play for.
Yeah, that Big Ten contract that the Maryland athletic program, you know, signed years ago pretty much is going to put Maryland on the map, and it's going to put them in the green pretty soon.
I also remember that the old station I used to work at, there was this one phone call that we got where it was this old guy. He's like going, Maryland should come out and just admit they did it for the money.
They did.
That was the big press conference that Kevin Anderson had.
Yeah, don't believe everything they said. They don't want to say that they didn't sign me because of my neck. Well, your neck was an issue, Nick Markakis. Yeah, more Orioles talk later on in this
program. He actually apologized for those remarks.
As he should have, because it was so uncharacteristic of the guy. I mean, when he came out with those comments, I'm like, dude, I don't even know who you are anymore.
It really was. I mean, Nick Markakis, why so bitter? I mean, you could come back and retire as an Oriole.
Well, I'll tell you what, nothing bitter about Maryland's 64-61 road win over the Nebraska Cornhuskers. Melo Trimble, the freshman guard, once again having an outstanding game, 21.7 rebounds, 4 assists for the young freshman.
And he was in foul trouble.
And I'll tell you what, man, I mean, Des Wells had an outstanding game, 18 points, 12 rebounds, 4 assists, and you could say Des Wells may be NBA bound soon. Melo Trimble, yeah. Is it safe to say Melo Trimble's on his way out?
Stay.
And you know what's weird? You hear people saying that Maryland's recruitment class is actually going to be better next year for their starting five. I mean, say Jake Layman comes back for his senior year, which he probably will. But needless to say, though, Des Wells, Melo Trimble, key components in Maryland's success in their recent run. Of course, you have Jake Layman, who still put up 11 points, 3 blocks, still turns over the ball quite a bit. But then again, that's expected in college basketball. Even your star players will turn over the ball 2 times, 3 times a game. But yeah, Maryland ending their season on a high note, their regular season on a high note, 26-5, 14-4 in the Big Ten. Moving on to the Big Ten tournament, men's tournament, that is. The Maryland men will be getting a double bye going into the quarterfinals, and hey, that's the beauty of having a second seed there.
We don't even know who they're playing.
Well, yeah, I know.
I mean, that is the mystery of the illustrious double bye that you get in conference tournament play. So you have to win one game, Josh. And then you go to the finals.
Yep, and the Maryland men, we won't know what their fate will be until the Big Ten tournament kicks off for men's basketball.
Two games, actually. It's 2 games.
Which will start on March 11th, the tournament will. So we're going to be looking at who the Maryland men may end up facing, and let's hope sometime next week we're talking Big Ten champion Maryland men Terrapins.
I mean, it was a close one with Nebraska because they won this. They squeaked this one by with just 3 points. But it was Nebraska who was 5-13 in conference play, 13-17 overall. You think that would be a team that Maryland would be able to have some easy work with? But it was a close game.
A road win's a road win.
A road win is a road win. Playing away from Xfinity Center, they've had some sketchy success, to say the least. Especially, I mean, can we just say this right now about a couple months ago, did you see this happening? Did you see Maryland being, you know, ranked number 8 overall in the AP, getting a double bye in the Big Ten tournament? If you would have told me that 2 months ago, I looked at you like, okay, I know that Maryland's not getting their ass kicked in the Big Ten this year, but huh?
Yeah, and looking ahead, it's safe to say that we, you know, if we would have made the final 64 teams or 66 teams, depending on who's in the play-in games, if we would have made the 64 final teams going into March Madness, I would have been happy. But considering where Maryland men are at right now, number 8 in the country, and where they are expected to finish towards the end of the Big Ten postseason, it is safe to say that it has been an outstanding year at College Park.
This is the Baltimore Sports Free-for-All.
The Orioles have played 8 exhibition games so far in MLB Spring Training 2015, and they are 2-6 in Grapefruit League play.
Big deal.
I know, Ray, but come on, man. You're the defending American League East champions. You should at least be .500.
In spring training.
In spring training, yes.
That I skip over in MLB The Show.
It's like the Oakland Raiders years ago when they went 4-0 in preseason. We won the preseason!
Slow clap for them.
Yeah, I know.
Good job. Nobody ever remembers preseason and spring training unless you're Troy Smith fans or unless you're Tyrod Taylor fans for the Baltimore Ravens and want to put stock in how a backup quarterback performs in the regular season against backups themselves.
Yeah.
And says, oh, this guy can start. Yeah, give him a chance, huh? That Tyrod Taylor, yeah, give him a chance. I mean, that Joe Flacco, he got to go. I mean, he starts every game, but who cares? He won us a Super Bowl. Who cares? He's got to go. You got to get Tyrod Taylor in there.
Yeah, the Baltimore Orioles won the 2002 Grapefruit League championship. Yeah, we're gonna have a great year, hon. Yeah, and how did that turn out?
Yeah, those years, I like to forget those years. Those are a part of the losing efforts.
Hey, remember when Jake Fox hit 400 in spring training? Yeah, it's June. No, we don't know.
Remember when he led the league in home runs in spring training? Yeah, well, where's Jake Fox?
Yeah, exactly.
All right, so we're looking at this 2-6 start in spring training play.
But we're not looking at the record, though. We're looking more
You really can't put much stock in that because people are working on things. I mean, if anything, you're just playing around on the mound.
Yeah, we're just looking at the statistics so far through 8 games. And just remember, folks, it's early in spring training, and you need to remember wins and losses don't really count in preseason. It's how the player that could be on the 25-man roster on opening day produces. And if we were going on a grade scale, starting with players that are getting an F- so far in spring training, we would have to start with one guy who has been overpaid and disappointing so far, and that is...
Ubaldo Jimenez. I mean, we have to look at this just because of the way his season turned out last year, that trade, and looking at the fact that Irvin Santana was the better pick of the two guys, and I think it was just like a $1 million difference between the two of them with Ubaldo Jimenez and Irvin Santana. And now you see Jimenez in his first start.
Yeah, should we talk the Detroit Tigers start or the Minnesota start? Which should we talk about?
Oh, we're talking about the Detroit Tigers start first.
Okay, yeah,
that was a dumpster fire.
That was a dumpster fire.
That was a complete dumpster fire, as in...
was complete revenge for the Tigers there in one game.
Yeah, Jimenez, overall, he had 5 earned runs. He had 2 hit batters, 2 walks, and just an inning and a third. He couldn't even get out of the second inning, Josh. And looking at that stat line, you're saying to yourself, wow, that's bad even by Ubaldo Jimenez standards. Then in his second start, he strikes out 4 or 5 batters. And this is actually a little more controversial for one Ubaldo Jimenez, is that he struck out 4 or 5 batters, but he also walked 3 guys in 2 innings.
Yeah, and even though you can look at one redeeming stat for Jimenez, he's leading the club in strikeouts. He's leading...
Cherry-picking stats.
Yeah, he's also tied for the club lead in walks as well. And if you were looking at his stat line, his complete stat line so far in spring training, 0-2 and 2 starts so far for Ubaldo, 16.20 earned run average, and 3 1/3 innings pitched. 7 runs allowed, 6 earned, and giving up a .286 batting average clip right there to opposing batters.
I mean, you're looking. I said that guys are trying to like work on things on the mound. Ubaldo Jimenez is trying to strengthen his delivery and make it more consistent, and try to get the walk numbers out. And that's Ubaldo Jimenez last year in a nutshell. Is that he looked dominant at times, and then he'd go and not be able to get out of another inning because he just walked so many guys, and you're just looking at him and saying, this guy is not even going to get out of the fifth inning, and he couldn't get out of the fifth inning on a regular basis last year. So, yeah, you don't put much stock into spring training. You don't look at everything like that. But eyes on Ubaldo Jimenez right now, it's like maybe perform a little better than that.
You know who I'm going to give an F to so far in spring training?
You're going to give it
your
to
your boy,
Bud Norris.
Bud Norris.
With a 36 earned run average?
Leading the club in earned runs allowed, or on average.
Oh, yeah. You could say he's either leading the club in earned runs allowed, as in the most earned runs allowed, or he's dead last in earned run average.
4 because, earned runs in one inning is pretty bad, right?
I mean, mainly when you rank earned run average, you usually put the lowest earned run average first, and then the highest one last.
Well, there's several players. Well, there are several players tied for the club lead in earned runs allowed, and some are
in
zero.
In which direction by your standards?
Well, I mean, if we're looking at starting pitchers, Wei-Yin Chen leading the club in earned run average, 2 scoreless innings pitched so far, and only 1 hit, 1 strikeout for Wei-Yin Chen. Even though it's 2 innings pitched, it's still decent.
I think he's going to be pretty decent this year.
I think he'll probably win 15 games again this year, say if he's the third starter, but... Who knows?
Maybe. You put too much stock in wins and losses for a pitcher. Overrated stat.
Yeah, it is. It is. I mean, if we were going to look at wins and losses, we would just keep looking at Chris Tillman's stats, who, by the way, Chris Tillman, 0 ERA as well. I mean, 2 scoreless innings pitched. So I guess if you had to take anything from spring training so far, at least you know Tillman and Wei-Yin Chen are on the right track given the time that they've put in so far in the exhibition games.
I mean, they have nothing really to work on other than what they're currently their current success. And with that, I guess they could just say, just keep doing what I'm doing. Just maybe make a small adjustment where Ubaldo Jimenez has got to like get something going fast, or else he's going to be bullpenning it again.
By the way, another starter for the Orioles pitcher who has 2 scoreless innings, Miguel Gonzalez. So there you go. Tillman, Chen, and Gonzalez so far this spring training have 2 scoreless innings and have looked quite decent so far in exhibition games.
So let me get this straight here. In spring training, your top starters that you had that were consistent number 1, 2s, and 3s last year are performing at a higher level, and meanwhile your tweeners like Bud Norris and Ubaldo Jimenez
You called Bud Norris a tweener, and he's your boy.
I got to give him a little bit of a tweener comment there, because when you compare him to Gonzalez, when you compare him to Wei-Yin Chen and Chris Tillman, I mean, those are your staples in your starting lineup and your starting rotation. And then you have the other guys that are vying for a 4 and 5 spot with Gausman and Bud Norris. Everybody, those guys have got to step up. Ubaldo Jimenez has got to step up, because you're looking at Dylan Bundy coming up here. He's starting off the regular season in Double A Bowie, which you would say, oh man, I want to see him up right now. No, relax, guys, relax. Just because he's in Double A doesn't mean we're not going to see him this year, because your top prospects, your young prospects, are in Double A. Your tweeners that are trying to make the roster are in Triple A.
By the way, a name to keep an eye on this spring training, and even though we really don't put much stock in the guys who have a jersey number that's number 60 or higher, right-hander John Keller, the 22-year-old righty out of Kingsport, Tennessee, so far this spring training, in two appearances, two scoreless innings pitched, three strikeouts, no walks for the young 22-year-old right-hander. Not to say this guy's going to make the 25-man roster, but it is a name to keep in mind for this summer, considering we're going to have roster moves from the minor leagues up. So, yeah, keep an eye on John Keller there, ladies and gentlemen.
Yeah, and the Orioles made their roster moves this past week. They've cut five guys, and hopefully that they can find some other place to play for baseball. Their baseball careers are not over at this point, because you look at spring training, and something that is lost in spring training is that there are guys out there who this is their last shot. This is their final shot to hit the big time, and you're going to see a lot of shattered dreams and ended dreams in spring training. It's kind of sad, too, because I remember it was Dave Tremblay, former Orioles manager, who seemed like
William Shatner, yeah.
On the last day of spring training, he was visibly upset at the fact that he just had to tell a bunch of guys, sorry, your baseball career is over. And looking at them in the face, that's still, even as many times as you do it every year, you think that you would get used to it, but I can see a lot of managers that really have a passion for the game, have a love of the game, have seen guys come up, succeed, and see them fail, grew up with the game, and saw guys in high school not even make it into college ball or the minors, and seeing that, I guess they're just so passionate about the game, and they see somebody who is equally as passionate about the game but doesn't have the tools to be successful in the majors. They see them not make the team, and it makes them sad. And that is one thing about spring training that you would put a damper on. Yes, it means warmer weather is ahead. Yes, it means opening day is just around the corner. Yes, it means baseball season starting up again, but it also means that it could be the end of many people's careers.
And by the way, another notable pitching move, according to numerous sources, Dylan Bundy to start the season at Double A Bowie. Good move, bad move?
I just said that, and yes, it's it's a good move, because they'll bring him up mid-season, or maybe sometime, maybe even in a couple months. When did Matt Wieters come up? I believe it was in 2008.
Yeah, around 2008, 2009. I mean, we look at Nick Markakis when he came up in 2006. Pretty much, I think Nick Markakis started the season on opening day, right? 2006? And played most of the season. We all remember when he hit three home runs against the Minnesota Twins at Oriole Park at Camden Yards and got a big ovation and pretty much put himself on the map according to Oriole fans' eyes. You look at Dylan Bundy, a guy who has major potential, maybe more so than most guys on the current 25-man roster. So, yeah, I mean, even though Dylan Bundy is having a so-so disappointing spring training, it is safe to have a guy who's still in his early 20s come into Double-A Bowie, tear through the competition, and say he goes to Norfolk Triple-A and tears through the competition there. It won't be long before he shows up in an Orioles uniform, say probably June maybe.
Yeah, and you know who Matt Wieters started his career up against? It was the Detroit Tigers and Dontrell Willis, and it was in 2009 when he was called up. It was May of 2009, late May of 2009, and I remember it too.
It was a packed house.
I remember it was on Masson, and when it was announced, they had Andy McPhail in studio, and it was Gary Thorne, and it was who was Thorne with? I know Thorne, and might even been Palmer. But anyway, I remember, Andy McPhail just nonchalantly just came out, and then he said, oh, yeah, Matt Wieters, he's hitting pretty good right now. He's got some good tools, everything like that, and he'll be up here Friday. He's like, and then everyone's just like, freeze. And he goes, and Thorne just has the look on his face, so you're saying he's being called up? Yeah, I am. Just nonchalantly said, wow, I'm watching a video package on Matt Wieters in AAA, and wow, look how young he looks.
And by the way, speaking of Matt Wieters, 0 for 13 so far this spring. Should this be of high concern, or do you think by, say, the middle of the exhibition season, he'll pick it up a little bit?
I think he'll pick it up just a bit.
Guy is recovering from Tommy John, and he's not going to be at 100% till later March. So
yeah, 2-6 right now. Guys are just trying to find their stuff, and we're just looking at how they develop their mechanics and what happens from here on out with spring training. But I mean, Matt Wieters, I hope that he can continue his success that he found in the early parts of the season last year, because that guy was on fire, was on his way to maybe getting paid.
Yeah, and if we had to stay on the offense, more so positions of need, let's go to the outfield here. Nolan Reimold, yeah, that same Nolan Reimold who we don't think is going to make it to April. I mean, not so much by his performance, maybe so much by his health status, is 2-for-9 so far in spring training, has driven in 2 RBIs. Daryl Alvarez, a guy whose name is going to be in the competition list for right field, so far this spring training, 3-for-9, Ray, with 1 home run, 4 runs driven in, 333 batting average, 400 on-base percentage.
Is he your poor man's Jake Fox?
You know what? Considering that Daryl Alvarez is a big prospect in the Orioles system and Jake Fox wasn't really a name. No.
I kind of contradicted myself by saying that nobody remembers what you did in spring training. Nobody remembers what you did in exhibition play. And yet, here I am always referencing that year that Jake Fox had and all of a sudden, it fell by the wayside.
By the way, left field competition, since we're talking Orioles players competing for spots, Steve Pierce hitting 364 in spring, 4-for-11 with 1 double. No production numbers yet as far as home runs and RBIs are concerned, but that 364 batting average will earn you a spot more so than anything else. And
guy's just a workhorse.
Yeah, Alejandro Deaza, a guy competing for the left field spot, not doing so good. I mean, yeah, he's got 1 home run, 2 RBIs, but batting at a 143 batting average clip. So you figure what is more productive in the stance of a competition, the RBIs and home runs or getting on base, batting average, and what have you. And considering the year Steve Pierce had when he was given the time to produce compared to guys like Alejandro Deaza or even, let's say, Daryl Alvarez, if he gets a chance out there, Nolan Reimold, if he gets a chance out there, and you also forget about Travis Snyder, who was traded, and you always have to remember guys who are traded for are more likely to start more so than guys who were even on the roster to begin with. It's safe to say left field, right field, we really are not quite sure who the 100% starters are going to be on opening day. But it is interesting so far. You have Daryl Alvarez and Steve Pierce as your front runners as far as batting average goes. But if we're looking at more than that, if we're looking at fielding percentage, who knows, Ray? Who knows at this point?
Nope. It's going to be exciting to watch, and all eyes are on opening day.
The Baltimore Sports Free For All.
Baltimore says goodbye to a receiver, and that receiver is Torrey Smith. Well, Torrey Smith himself said goodbye to Baltimore, considering that he was the one who announced his departure via his blog post on sportsblog.com. Can we have a sports blog?
I think it's more of an exclusive blogging site for professional athletes, and I'll tell you what, though. I do think it's cool that there are professional athletes out there that are willing to blog their sentiments about certain issues, whether it be social issues, on-the-field issues, and what have you. And it is nice to see that Torrey Smith kind of took this time out of his day to just publish this blog, thanking everybody from the fans to the coaching staff to his players, even putting some names out there, players that have meant a lot to him. So it was a nice way to exit, and you would have thought to yourself that, wow, and this was like at the beginning of the episode when you were saying, yeah, you made it seem like an obituary for Torrey Smith, the way things are being handled so far.
It was an in memoriam. I mean, you see You see athletes all over sports. And when they have a prominent figure in their city and they go around and do things for the community and they have to depart due to free agency, you see them sometimes take ads out of newspapers and make their final goodbyes there. I remember Nick Markakis did that in the Baltimore Sun. And you're seeing this more often or not than athletes trying to connect with their fans and trying to say, hey, even in this era of free agency, there still is a little bit of loyalty there. Yes, I'm moving on to greener pastures, even though I don't know if Torrey Smith is moving on to greener pastures in San Francisco. I mean, right now, Patrick Willis retiring at the age of 30, Jim Harbaugh being ousted to Michigan, and everything else that's going on. Colin Kaepernick, is he being traded? Torrey Smith, what are you getting into out there? I guess that is all about the money move right there because, hey, Smith has got his Super Bowl. Now he's just looking to get paid as a receiver and maybe trying to be a number one somewhere down the line.
And looking at Torrey Smith and what he has accomplished in his 4 years as a Baltimore Raven, winning a Super Bowl, of course, is a huge deal. Making the playoffs 3 out of 4 seasons that he came into the league when he was drafted in the second round out of Maryland in 2011. He did post up some very memorable seasons. In 2013, he achieved his first 1,000-yard season, making him the first Ravens drafted wide receiver to achieve that feat.
Sorry, Travis Taylor.
Yeah, sorry, Travis Taylor and Mark Clayton. In 2014, Smith caught 11 touchdown receptions. And here's the thing, Ray. Did you know he was the first Ravens receiver to catch 10 or more touchdowns since Michael Jackson did it in 1996?
Hee hee. Not that Michael Jackson.
Not that Michael Jackson. No.
A different Michael
not
Jackson.
Not the moonwalk. Nope, not that.
I always thought that was pretty fascinating when I was a kid and seeing the Ravens coming here. I'm like, the Ravens have a player named Michael Jackson? That's awesome. I got to get behind this team right there.
Yeah, but they had a quarterback named Vinny Testaverde, too. And
they also had a quarterback named Jim Harbaugh.
Yep, and who would have thought that guy would have been a future opponent later on down the road?
In a Super Bowl.
Yeah, and who would have thought that your two starting wide receivers from that Super Bowl winning team would end up later being suiting up in on that losing team.
And who would have thought 2 years removed from said Super Bowl that that coach would be on his way out to his alma mater in Michigan?
Yeah.
Who would have thunk it? Only in San Francisco does that really happen. Wait, no. That's not saying a lot because, I mean, come on, it happens in Oakland across the bay. It happens in, for the most part, it happened in Buffalo for a little bit, but that team's kind of fun to watch this offseason.
Yeah, I was going to use a phrase from an old song, what a difference a day makes, 24 little hours, but man, what a difference 3 seasons make, especially in the National Football League. Looking at Torrey Smith and how things have panned out since he made this announcement that he's going to be leaving the Baltimore Ravens, most likely going to be suiting up for the San Francisco 49ers next season. It is safe to say that with the cut of Jacoby Jones, which I guess most fans looking down the road is, yeah, guy's an excellent kick returner, but as a third, fourth wide receiver, we could definitely do better in that department. But losing one or two starting wide receivers in a span of 3 years, you have some work to do in either free agency or the drafting department.
I mean, you look at Torrey Smith in the season that he had in 2014, you could say that he got off to a slow start, but then the guy really picked it up and was forced to be reckoned with for the Baltimore Ravens in 2014. Ended up with 49 receptions and 767 yards. He was hurt for the early part of the season, got off to a slow start, but managed with 11 touchdowns at the end of the year. And yeah, the first guy to have over 10 receiving touchdowns since Michael Jackson did it. And
hee-hee!
Yes, and Torrey Smith. Guy's going to be missed right now. That's a wide receiver who just, when he came on into the league in 2011, he had 50 receptions for 841 yards. It was very impressive rookie numbers. He was pretty much the equivalent of what he was in college, because I just remember in college he was just, it didn't matter what quarterback was throwing to him. They were constant long bombs to him. He was just running out routes and just burning everybody in sight. And that's what Torrey Smith did when he came onto the scene and was doing all the way up until he departed this past week, Josh. And now, Torrey Smith, we wish you well. Another person that left the Ravens this week, though, Pernell McPhee. Is that a little bit of cause of concern, especially since they're trying to restructure Nada right now?
Given their past history, let's say their last several seasons of losing key defensive players like let's say, Paul Kruger, Arthur Jones, Donnell Ellerbe.
Jarrett Johnson.
Yeah. You know, you would think that losing all those guys in a span of a year would have decimated a defense, let alone a team like the Baltimore Ravens, but considering their track record of guys they have drafted or guys that they've picked up via undrafted in training camp, it's safe to say that I don't think the Ravens are going to be hurting long-term in Pernell McPhee. You know what? Good for you. You got that big contract. Hopefully you make the most of it, unlike some guys have had in the past, say, Adelius Thomas, Jamie Sharper, you know, the list goes on and on there.
Yeah, what happened to those guys?
I'll tell you what, Adelius Thomas had the most. Ed Hartwell. Ed Hartwell's another guy there, too, we can add to that list.
Okay, what was Ed short for, though? To give you a little bit of a quiz.
Edgerton.
Edgerton Hartwell,
yep.
Yes.
Yep, of course.
Number 56 for the Baltimore Ravens. You were thinking that he was, especially when they went to the 3-4, that he was going to be a force to be reckoned with Ray Lewis, and then it didn't really pan out the way people wanted it to.
And if we're looking at names in free agency, look, we're not moving towards the draft yet, folks. There are still guys that are on the free agent tracker that say the Ravens have about $7 million in cap room, $8 million give or take, may have more by the end of Tuesday, March the 10th, if, say, Haloti Ngata or Darius Webb are even still on the roster by then.
Or if they even get restructured. And also, the Ravens lost some cap room this past week, another $1.8 million because they had to settle with Ray Rice.
Which they should have.
And they got settled with Ray Rice because, I mean, you could say, well, so basically, you beat your wife and you get paid $1.8 million. I mean, what's wrong with that? And the thing is, though, is that it's a legal standpoint, and this is what unions do for you.
You
is
can't
that
be suspended twice.
You
in
can't
the same
be suspended twice in the same season for
the same
offense.
Yes.
That's not, I mean, you could say, well, it's double jeopardy, and that only applies to law. Well, it also applies to a collective bargaining agreement. Do you remember that in 2011 that the players had to sign, or else there was going to be a lockout in the NFL that they avoided, luckily, and I still can't believe they had a referee lockout. That was a disgrace.
If it was handled in the right direction, at the right place, at the right time, this wouldn't even be an issue right now. Even the Justin Forsett free agency issue wouldn't be an issue. And by the way, four teams, one of the Ravens included, are interested in Justin Forsett right now in free agency. By the way, Ray, one of those teams, down I-95, Washington Redskins. But I don't really see that as a potential good move. I mean, yeah, it would be good move if you were adding to the depth chart for the Redskins running back, you know, system. Even
that
though
they
Alfred
already have.
Yeah, Alfred Morris is pretty much the lead guy there. And also you got, Roy Helu there?
Roy Helu Jr.
Who's good for a couple good fantasy games. So, yeah, I don't think that would be a good fit there for Forsett. But looking at free agency, the tracker there for wide receivers, since that is the main cause of concern right now for the Ravens offense.
But Roy Helu right now, he's going into free agency, so they're trying to get the Redskins are trying to sign him back.
Yeah, so
He's a good Redskin.
He's a good red zone threat. Let's
he's
just
a good Redskin.
He's a good red zone threat.
Good Redskin. Good boy.
Yeah. If we're looking at the tracker here, of course, we know Torrey Smith's going to be on his way to San Fran. Jeremy Maclin is off the radar. Harry Douglas is off the radar. And you're looking at guys who are available. Michael Crabtree's available. Andre Johnson, longtime Houston Texan, cut the other day by the Houston Texans.
Ah, so who was the bigger loss for their team, prospective team? Andre Johnson for the Texans or Torrey Smith for the Ravens?
You know, you would think Andre Johnson, considering the fact the guy got his 1,000th career reception, pretty much is on his way to a Hall of Fame career, say he plays the next 3-4 seasons. And also, I believe Stoll has a lot to give. Now, is it good to have, I mean, let's just live in fantasy land for about a minute here. Is it good to have Andre Johnson on your roster if you already have Steve Smith? Yeah, maybe if this was 2006, 2007, it would be awesome. But, you know, in the NFL, you have to live in the reality that these guys have a 3 to 4 year window to produce,
And a shelf life. And look at Andre Johnson. The guy's like 33 years old right now, still putting up some decent numbers, 85 receptions for 936 yards last year.
Which is good.
Yeah.
But still,
considering who was throwing to him.
Yeah. And considering the yardage and the receptions, it certainly doesn't add up. So, yeah, you could understand why the Texans did what they had to do, but yeah, you think in this situation you would have kept Andre Johnson, but folks, that's the world we live in the NFL salary cap.
The salary cap in free agency, and it doesn't have to necessarily be players that are loyal to you, but it also doesn't necessarily have to be teams that are loyal to said player. And everybody going around, this is the era that we live in terms of free agency. But you see guys taking out ads in newspapers and looking at blogs and saying goodbye, their goodbyes to the city they play in. Shows that they could be back eventually. Maybe Torrey Smith could retire as a Raven. Jared Johnson signed a one-day contract this past week and retired as a Raven. I thought that was pretty neat. I actually am a big fan of these one-day contract signings so players can retire with the teams that they're best known for. That's way Favre retired as a Packer. And then you also had it to where, let's see, A big free agent acquisition this past week, though. And Ndamukong Suh.
Yeah.
Miami Dolphins.
You know, I don't...
A lot of people are comparing that to Albert Haynesworth.
I think the contract, you would compare it to Albert Haynesworth, and it just seems like whenever defensive tackles sign these big contracts, they just go out the pasture, and they're just not the same player. But I think that Ndamukong Suh, a guy who is still in his prime in the National Football League, I think he will put up decent numbers in the AFC East. Do I think he'll be dominant, though? I don't think the Dolphins are the most dominant defensive line in that whole division. I think it's the Buffalo Bills at this point.
Yeah, Tom Brady says, I got to play that guy twice now. Oh, boy, that's going to be very interesting meatball to swallow.
Speaking of Florida teams, though, is it safe to say Julius Thomas' career, rest in peace? I mean, you are in Jacksonville.
Yep.
You do have Blake Bortles, though, who has a lot of potential, but still at the same time, Blake Bortles isn't Peyton Manning.
Players go to Jacksonville to die, or soon to be, players go to London to die.
Unless they're coached by Tom Coughlin and your starting quarterbacks, Mark Brunell, and your wide receiver Jimmy Smith, Fred Taylor.
How good was that team?
If we were talking about that team, then okay, yeah, you're in great hands. But yeah, this is the 2015 Jacksonville Jaguars. They aren't even filling their stadium anymore.
I'm gonna go ahead.
TV blackouts.
And their upper deck's getting tarped. Good pick, Tagliabue. Good pick.
Yeah.
Hey, let's put a team in Jacksonville
before
over Baltimore.
Yeah.
That sounds like a wonderful idea.
But you know what? Let's anger Cleveland fans by letting this move to Baltimore happen, and then yeah. Sure. Okay.
No, you know they were bitter about it, Josh.
Oh, yeah. Of course.
But their hands were tied on that. They were really bitter about that move, and there was eventually
you're talking about the NFL, right?
And there was eventually legal litigation, everything that was going on, and now that they have rules in place, they made it the Art Modell rules to where you really have to have league approval before you move a team like that.
Now here is a name on the free agent tracker that I don't think most people are going to be looking at right away, but I think is a guy that if you pick up for cheap and if he stays healthy, he can be productive. And you may recognize this name, Oakland Raiders wide receiver Denarius Moore. And looking at his statistics in his last several seasons, now, folks, keep in mind here, this is the Oakland Raiders we're talking about. And think of the quarterbacks that have played for the Oakland Raiders.
Think of the children.
Yeah. Yeah. Think of the quarterbacks. That's right. You can't even think of any quarterbacks that played for that team.
Carson Palmer?
Yeah, well, yeah. But
No. Wait. Kyle Bowler played for the Raiders.
Yeah, for a little bit, yeah. Yeah. But Denarius Moore, in his first three seasons, not counting last year because he pretty much was in play and injured, had 12 receptions for 115 yards last season, no touchdowns. His first three seasons in the league, though, 33 catches, 618 yards, 5 touchdowns. Second season, 51 catches, 741 yards, 7 touchdowns. 2013, 46 catches, 695 yards, 5 touchdowns. That just reminds you of Torrey Smith a little bit, doesn't it, right there, those numbers?
That it does, and looking at his stock, up, down?
Up, down, up, down, down. So is the time right to throw a good bargain contract out there via Justin Forsett? Maybe pick up a guy who, hey, is still 26 years old, can still produce if he's healthy. He's in a much better situation franchise-wise. Probably has a much better quarterback, better offensive line. Hey, I mean, it seems like a good move there. All right, prediction time, Ray. Since this is the day of NFL free agency deadlines, times to make the contracts legit, finalize, trades, what have you.
Wax on the seal, making it dry.
Yes. Let's start with the big guy. Is he either A, restructured, B, released, or C, traded?
I'm going to go restructured.
And which move's better? And which move is better in your opinion?
I got to go with restructured, considering that Haloti Ngata has moved to his position from nose tackle. He now plays end. It's still a force to be reckoned with. He just got rid of Pernell McPhee, and I think that they got rid of Pernell McPhee because they didn't want to have two high-paid linemen on the line. So I think that they're going to get a restructuring done because seeing Pernell McPhee go was kind of the writing on the wall that Ravens fans needed to see that the Ravens were trying to restructure the longtime veteran Haloti Ngata, which you remember was drafted for the reason so that they could keep Ray Lewis because he was not satisfied with what he was playing and everything that he was doing at the time.
I think he will be released. Holodinata will be. It's going to be very bittersweet. I think people will probably be outraged by the move like they have been with several Ravens moves the last several off seasons.
And yet, look where it's gotten them.
Yeah, and but I do think the right move with Holodinata at this point, maybe not so much restructuring, but I think if there is a team that has a lot of cap space, you should try trading the guy because, let's face it, if there's a team hurting on the defensive line and they got a lot of cap space, it's not going to hurt to have a multiple-time Pro Bowler on your defensive line, especially a guy who, say, still has, what, 2 to 3 solid years of good play left at the defensive line?
And then they could restructure his contract.
Exactly.
At that time and see what they do right there. So the other guy that we're referring to is one Ladarius Webb.
Cornerback.
What is he going to do in terms of contract structure? And the guy is not living up to the big contract that he signed a while ago. Some of it not his fault because he's been, you know, sidelined due to injury and everything that was going on. But at the same time, it's all about a business. It's all about free agency and salary caps. And what have you done for me lately? What can you do for me in the future? That's one Ladarius Webb that you have to think the guy's, the juice is not worth the squeeze on that contract. The guy's got to work out his contract or he could be gone.
So restructured, released, or traded? What is Ladarius's web status?
I just can't think that the Ravens can afford to lose any more in that secondary. So you think that you would hope that Ladarius Webb has tremendous upside to him, considering what he did before he signed that big contract, before he was sidelined due to various injuries. And looking at Ladarius Webb, I would have to say they restructure him as well.
Yeah, I'll tell you what, Ray. If Ladarius Webb is not restructured by the end of the Tuesday free agency deadline there, 4 o'clock, I will be surprised because this is a guy, when he's healthy, is a very solid cornerback. Not like Jimmy Smith, though, who has a lot more potential at the cornerback position than Ladarius Webb. Not knocking Ladarius Webb by any means necessary. The guy is a very solid cornerback.
What is this, the Nation of Domination?
But by any means necessary.
I haven't heard that saying in years.
Oh, man. Remember when Crush was on Nation of Domination?
Was he?
Yeah, he was.
I don't remember Brian Adams being a part of the Nation of Domination.
But
I remember him being a part of the NWO.
My goodness. But, yeah, Ladarius Webb, though, when he's healthy, is a very solid cornerback. I believe he still has some years left of good play there. But if he's not restructured, given his status in the last several seasons, I will be very shocked. And if it comes down to restructuring or release, if he demands a lot of money still, it may be time to say goodbye to number 21.
Say goodbye to 21. Before we say goodbye on this show, we've got 2 minute rants. Josh?
30 years old. What does 30 years old mean to you? For some, it means they are still in the prime of their life. For some, they think their life is over with. They're never going to get better, but they're going to slightly get worse. I'll be 30 years old on May 14th. Am I looking forward to it? Yes and no. But then again, hey, that's life after all. One guy who is 30 years old, who still probably has a good amount of years left to play in football, but has decided to abruptly end his career, is one Pro Bowl linebacker, Patrick Willis. Now, when Patrick Willis was drafted by the San Francisco 49ers out of Ole Miss, this was a guy who many have likened him to be the next Ray Lewis, a future Hall of Fame linebacker. Patrick Willis, in his first 10 years in the National Football League, had 7 Pro Bowl nods, which means that pretty much if you have 7 Pro Bowls in your first 7 seasons, you are more than likely on your way to a Hall of Fame career. Not to mention, if you went to 3 straight NFC Championship games and have went to 1 Super Bowl, yeah, Hall of Fame career. But for Patrick Willis, though, last season was not so much a memorable year, 2014. Only appeared in 6 games and ended his season due to a chronic injury to his left big toe, or as many would predict, turf toe. 30-year-old Patrick Willis, do I believe he still has a lot left to offer in the National Football League? Yes, I do. Do I believe it is necessary for him to continue his career if he still has this injury? Absolutely not. For a guy who has been an upstanding player in the National Football League, I think Patrick Willis may be right on this one.
Yes, 30 years old seems to be the plateau, but at the same time, I can't help but wonder that the circumstances in San Francisco could influence this. All right, so daylight savings time happened this past week, and I have to say, wow, the sun was out at 7:30 still on this past Monday. 60 degrees, and I just can't help but think to myself, daylight savings time. Why do we have to change our clocks every year? It's just, I know it's something to do with farms and cows and everything that goes on, but at the same time, getting dark at 4 o'clock is very depressing when we switch to standard time in the wintertime. And I guess it gets brighter earlier, but I remember you getting me out of bed and this morning, Josh, that we record this show.
And
the sun still wasn't even out. You call me, it's still dark in my room, and I'm thinking to myself, what is going on here? I can't remember the last time that I woke up and the sun was not out, and I would have to think that, oh, it happened in the summertime when we had daylight savings time. I just don't get the concept behind daylight savings time, never really have as a kid, and I just couldn't help but wonder, why can't we just have like this all year round, daylight savings time? Because it is exactly what we've wanted this entire winter. We want the sun to stay out longer. We don't want to have to deal with it getting dark at 4 o'clock. It's just depressing. And you can't work as long if you're like in the manual labor field and you rely on direct sunlight to get you through the day. So daylight savings time, I want it to be daytime for most of the time because nighttime is just depressing and it's time for sleep. That's just the one thing that I see out of daylight savings time is the fact that we can stay awake longer and stay more chip. I mean, look, as soon as the sun came out this morning on this podcast, I was pretty much dead in the water. I was like, oh boy, it's still dark out and I don't want to deal with this anymore. But as soon as that sun came out, rays of light hit me. And then all of a sudden, I was feeling refreshed, feeling great. I've had my coffee. I've had my tea. I am ready to hit the ground running. Bring on spring.
That's the spirit, Ray Atkinson. That's the spirit right there, to chip off the old block. There you go, buddy. Yeah, I'm not a fan of losing an hour's sleep either.
Mattingly, shave those sideburns.
Yeah. I'll tell you what, though. It does make sense, though, to a degree, because you do have farmers out there that are religious with this whole thing and keeping up with the sunlight and what have you and agriculture. I don't know. I'm more of a fan of gaining an hour of sleep more so than losing an hour.
But it all depends. If you're working overnight, you're not gaining an hour of sleep or losing an hour of sleep. You're gaining an hour of work time or losing an hour of work time. So there's that.
Yeah, yeah.
Or if you're Curtis Axel, you're gaining more time in your Royal Rumble countdown.
Yep. 16, 17, 18. No, I'm not counting down.
All right. Well, anyway.
What are we talking about next week? Yeah.
Next week, we're going to be talking about some more free agent moves as free agency continues for the NFL.
Hopefully the Ravens make some. They need to.
Okay. We'll be talking about a little bit more tournament stuff.
Yep, absolutely. Hopefully we'll be talking about the Maryland men being your, we can't say undisputed Big Ten champions, but your Big Ten tournament champions.
We'll be talking about Orioles spring training and
a better record.
What can they do in the better their record, and what can Ubaldo Jimenez do to improve his abysmal start to spring training? And maybe we'll be talking about something surprising. You never know. It's the NFL offseason.
You never know. It's a slow news season as well, so hopefully we get something big to talk about in March.
And yet we could still churn out an hour podcast every week, but this is another week of the Baltimore Sports Free-for-All. I am Ray Atkinson.
I am Josh Hall.
We will see you all.
The Baltimore Sports Free-for-All.